It's 7:43. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Xander Alloy. Today, West Virginia Public Broadcasting covers all of the state, but 24 years ago, that wasn't always the case for regions like the Eastern Panhandle.
There's this sort of sense that we're really far away from Charleston, and the coverage wasn't great up here.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. Art and history were focal points for the governor's West Virginia Day celebrations yesterday. Governor Jim Justice was joined by members of his cabinet in the State House Rotunda to dedicate four murals depicting iconic state scenes, including the Battle of Philippi and the West Virginia State Seal. The art installations were part of architect Cass Gilbert's original plan for the Capitol's dedication in 1932, but a lack of funds during the Great Depression prevented their creation. The Capitol will receive four more murals, which are expected to be completed by November 2024. Later in the day, Justice made his way up to Wheeling, where he helped unveil a statue of Arthur Borman, the state's first governor, in front of West Virginia Independence Hall. More than $3.7 million is going to the Clay County Business Development Authority, U.S. Senator Joe Manchin announced Thursday. The funds will be used to support repairs to the Buffalo Creek Recreational Trail as a result of storms and flooding in 2016. The funds total $3,752,694 from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's Federal Emergency Management Agency. Manchin, a member of the U.S. Senate Appropriations Committee, said it's vital that West Virginia communities receive the resources to rebuild and recover after any storm or disaster that comes the state's way. The 2016 floods resulted in severe damages in Clay, Kanawha, Fayette, Nicholas, Summers, and Greenbrier counties. Wednesday was the federal holiday Juneteenth, which celebrates the emancipation of enslaved people in the United States. Brianna Heaney talked to the Mountain Staters as they hit the streets to celebrate the nation's and the state's newest holiday.
Paul Dunn is a pastor at First Baptist Church of Charleston. He is from Texas, where the holiday originates, and says the holiday set the ball in motion for things like historical black colleges and universities, family reunions around the holiday, and civil justice.
The importance of Juneteenth, with the letting everyone know freedom. I'm a Texan and I grew up celebrating Juneteenth, and so I think it's very important for people to really understand four principles about Juneteenth. Number one, the slaves wanted to make sure that their families were unified. So a lot of holidays, a lot of family reunions happen around Juneteenth in Texas. Secondly, they wanted to do something about the mass illiteracy problem. So a lot of our HBCUs were started right after the Emancipation Proclamation was signed. Thirdly, we wanted to find candidates that we could get involved in the political process. And then fourthly, a lot of the slaves wanted to sue their masters because they had been falsely enslaved for years after the Emancipation Proclamation was signed.
Linda Wooster has a long familial history in Appalachia that started when her great-grandmother was sold to a family in Virginia.
They were bought and they were sold to somebody in Rocky Mount, Virginia. And it went on. And my mother, who is 96, lives in Virginia. And she always tells you, please tell the history of the family to keep it alive. And I have passed down the history of the family to my grandchildren who are old enough to understand. And they are to pass it down to their children so that we'll know the purpose and what we went through.
Now she celebrates Juneteenth as a part of her family's story of resilience and endurance.
It's just knowing what our ancestors had to go through. And the reason we celebrate, it started in, Texas, when they found out that slaves were free. And we celebrate every year, and I get all excited.
17-year-old Maureen Wilder was in the Juneteenth parade in Charleston, and she says this is a special day of togetherness for her and her friends.
My favorite part was walking with my girls with the Zenos Espolon chapter. Like, we was all hype. We were singing and dancing. There was no music while we were walking, but we made music. Everybody was so nice, handing out the candy to the kids. It was so fun.
Rod Blackstone says he's happy to be part of a holiday that celebrates everyone's freedom.
Vibes today is that it's a great community celebration and really a freedom celebration in the sense that this is a day of freedom.
Okay.
The mixed messages of July 4th as a national forever holiday are tempered now with an ability to say this is when we had more full freedom in the United States. This is the day that commemorates that. So it's a great day to be able to be here and to recognize that and to be able to say, yeah, this is part of this. This is something that's true, and this is something that's real and something that needs to continue.
Juneteenth celebrations began last week in West Virginia on the state capitol grounds and will continue through this weekend. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brianna Heaney in Charleston.
Sunny and hot today with a slight chance of afternoon rain, high temperatures in the 80s and 90s. Mostly clear skies tonight with lows in the 60s and 70s. Sunny and hot tomorrow with highs in the 80s and 90s. Partly cloudy skies tomorrow night with a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms. Lows in the 60s and 70s. Partly sunny and windy on Sunday with a chance of rain and thunderstorms. High temperatures in the 80s and 90s. The time is 7:50. This is West Virginia Morning. Cecilia Mason spent 23 years as a reporter for West Virginia Public Radio, even helping establish the Eastern Panhandle Bureau in Shepherdstown. She moved on to a role with Shepherd University's Office of Communications in 2014, but said her time in journalism shaped the course of her career and her life. Mason retired earlier this month, but she returned to campus and sat down with our current Eastern Panhandle reporter, Jack Walker, to reflect on her time in public radio and how the industry has changed since she left.
To begin, could you tell me about how you got started in public radio and the origins of our Eastern Panhandle Bureau?
So back in the late 1980s, there was a president here named Dr. Michael Rickards, and he wanted to have an association with West Virginia Public Radio at the time, and there was someone else here named Bill Lucht, who was in, I think he ran the counseling center at the time. He was a psychologist, and it seems to me they maybe approached West Virginia Public Radio about airing something, like some kind of panel discussion or something like that. I was not working for West Virginia Public Radio at the time. However, I was freelancing for them. So Beth Voorhees was the news director, and Chuck Anzalevich was in news at the time, and they would hire me or have me cover things and pay me to do stories because I worked for a local radio station. So basically, talks were underway to have a bureau here.
Do you have a sense of why they wanted to have an office in the Eastern Panhandle?
They really wanted to make sure the Eastern Panhandle, which seems, you know, has this, I mean, you work here, there's this sort of sense that we're really far away from Charleston, and the coverage wasn't great up here, except for what freelance could be done. So basically, it was embedded into the university.
Obviously, 23 years is a long time to work anywhere, but I'm wondering, are there any particular moments from your time in public radio that stick out to you today as especially meaningful or salient?
Well, one of the things that happened when the Bureau opened is I was able to join the Senate Radio TV Gallery in Washington and, in essence, become the person who could go into D.C. and cover Congress for West Virginia Public Broadcasting because, you know, I could hop on a train, right?
And what did it look like to cover Congress back then?
I would go in and, like, during the State of the Union, you would go in and stand in Statuary Hall, and then all the members would be in the House chamber, and you would come out. They would come out after the speech. But first you got to watch, like, the Supreme Court walk through and all members of Congress, people you recognized. And then afterwards they would come out.
Aside from the type of reporting that you did, does anything about radio journalism stand out to you as having been especially different back then?
I mean, technologically, it's taken great leaps. When I first started the job, they gave me a reel-to-reel recorder, and I had a Marantz cassette tape recorder that probably weighed 20 pounds. And they basically, I was cutting tape with a razor blade. When I had a cart machine, which was sort of, for people not in the business, an 8-track machine, only it stopped.
That does sound very different from the type of technology I now use as a reporter.
It went from, like, cutting things with razor blades to me being able to do this with, with that kind of recorder.
Got it. And back in 2014, I know that you moved to a communications position with Shepherd, but even before that, you'd been working as a instructor on several different journalism courses for the university. Throughout those years, what has your time with Shepherd been like?
About, I want to say 20 years ago, a little more than 20 years ago, the communication department asked me to teach a class. And initially, it was a sort of a broad radio class. In fact, the person who just became executive director of university communications was one of the first students in that class, which is why I know it was about 20 years or more ago. And so basically, I started teaching the class, and then they redid the curriculum in the comm department, and they turned it into a class called News Practicum. And basically, it was teaching what I did all those years for a living. So that has been one of the most enjoyable things here at Shepherd in being on campus, was working with students.
And now that you're moving on from Shepherd and you're even seeing, like you said, some of your past students take senior positions on campus, what does it feel like to sort of pass all of that on?
That's been really a great, thing that I've enjoyed. And that goes back to my years in journalism as a journalism student at Western Kentucky University. When I went to Western Kentucky University, I had teachers who had worked for the Lexington Herald Leader, the Courier Journal in Louisville, the Associated Press. They were working journalists who wanted to teach and pass their craft along to younger people. So I feel like I've gotten to do that by teaching this class and carrying on what my professors gave me. So that's been very fulfilling.
That was Cecilia Mason, West Virginia Public Broadcasting first ever Eastern Panhandle reporter, speaking with Jack Walker about her recent retirement and her storied career in public radio. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University. Our Appalachia Health News Project is made possible with support from Marshall Health. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, and Maria Young. Eric Douglas produced today's show. I'm Xander Alloway.